Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Well podcast. No, this is not SBF coming to you live from prison. My name is Q, and for those of you who remember me, I am not coming to you live from my mother's basement. Long time listeners will remember me from the Bitcoin Magazine live show. Then FTX imploded. I got laid off along with half the industry, and I did what any self-respecting Bitcoiner would do after a trauma. Total radio silence. And in my absence, nothing really happened in the Bitcoin space. We're still waiting for that ETF. We're still waiting for 100K Bitcoin. Still waiting for some politician like our president to actually do something like a Bitcoin strategic reserve. It's been quiet 4 years, no? I'm just kidding. You know, I left during a bankruptcy and I came back to a completely different Bitcoin environment. So buckle up, because today's guest has been in the trenches throughout the last 4 years. This is the Bitcoin Well podcast, and we are so back. I am pleased to introduce my guest, my friend, none other than the failed host of Between Two ASICs, Tatum Turnup. Tatum, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. I appreciate the nod to the past.
Hey man, we all have a past. We gotta own it. That way we can move forward. That's what my therapist tells me, at least. But of course, Tatum is not only known for Between Two ASICs, but is the golden child over at Compass Mining. So I wanna, before we get into the mining of it all, let's recap these last 4 years. Essentially, since FTX's implosion, we've seen everything from we're in the new epoch. We finally got 100K Bitcoin, but we also got a new all-time high before the halving. Talk to me a little bit about those vibes that you felt. Were you as ecstatic, euphoric, and you know, believe the hype cycle that this cycle will be different when we got a new all-time high before the halving?
Yeah, dude, I still am in the it's different this time camp. But yeah, leading up to the halving was definitely different vibes altogether. This was my first halving that I've like been deep in it. And I streamed the halving block. I was in Denver for the halving party. Vibes were just like ecstatic all around, IRL on Twitter. Things then just kind of started getting really weird, and it's been freaky ever since.
Wait, you can't just say it got freaky and leave it at that. You cannot.
Dude, I mean, look, if you look at where we were at the halving, whenever that happened, and then now, it's like, are we talking about the same? What the hell is that? Sorry, my cat just like went crazy mode or something. Yeah, I'm a cat dad. Look, it's who I am. Love him to death. But yeah, if you look at Bitcoiners at the halving and then Bitcoiners today, you would probably not think it was the same community that was around 2 years ago.
Dude, it's like light years different than what it was 4 years ago. I mean, yeah. I remember the halving during 2020, and like it was almost like silent. The vibes were just like, cool, we made it, like cheers, we know this means new all-time highs, like here we go. And then that last epoch, like it feels like Bitcoin really entered the mainstream. It was like normalized though. We did have that all-time high in 2017. People were like, oh, Bitcoin, you know, came back on my radar after some maybe less than PC behavior around Bitcoin in the early days. But at the same time, you know, we've reached a point where we have it normalized in the political discourse. You watch any financial news program and Bitcoin's price is on that bottom row, no different than the S&P 500 or NASDAQ's price. Like, it's here to stay. That to me tells me that we've entered a new era of Bitcoin. But at the same time, it's like, I don't buy into this time will be different. We are in the throes of a bear market. I don't care about price. I care about vibes. And like, when all we see is everyone fighting over whatever the latest thing you want to argue or fight over is on Bitcoin Twitter, like that to me reads like a bear market.
Yeah, we're definitely the bear market is the vibes are similar to the last time we were in the really belly of the bear. And that was actually why I started the show, was because everything was just so bleak. Now I just don't have the energy to do it. But yeah, it's
order from Jack Dorsey had nothing to do with it.
I mean, look, when he says to come to Costa Rica, you do it, all right. but yeah, it's definitely bleak out there. But I think it's still going to be different, but not in the same way that everyone was initially saying this time will be different. Like, I mean, we've seen drawbacks larger than this. I think we're also seeing just new people enter the cycles, and that's also just kind of taking some precedence of our perception of it, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it is different in the fact that it is mainstream now. You're right. At the bottom of any sort of financial news you're watching, it's a ticker just like S&P and you know, Dow, anything like that. But at the same time, there's still that cypherpunk in the back of a lot of Bitcoiners' heads. It's like, is this what we really wanted the whole time? And I'm on both sides of the coin, I think. Like, yeah, I would love for it to be just like mainstream and people just reference it because like I was here for all of this. But at the same time, I want it to be what it was supposed to be, and that is, you know, the distance from third parties and mainstream traditional finance, stuff like that. But it's a double-edged sword, but it's a fun one to wield.
I mean, I think something that has bothered me, and this is something that I'm planning a deeper dive episode with a later guest. I have always believed that Bitcoin was meant to be the separation of state and money. And yet I feel like for whatever reason during this cycle, we are simping over government officials who just say Bitcoin in a tweet offhand. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't care for it. I don't care if this politician is going to push forward a Bitcoin policy or not. To me, it's actually irrelevant. And the best example I can give, and this will be a nice transition to like our main focus of today's episode, is look at what happened in May of 2021. China bans Bitcoin mining. Yes, the price reflected it for a moment. The hash rate reflected it for a moment. And then those miners moved, plugged in their devices elsewhere. And then we are long removed from that moment as a momentary like blip on Bitcoin's radar. Like that is, I think, the beauty of Bitcoin. And I feel like maybe it's part of like this new class of Bitcoiners coming in due to traditional financial institutions offering the ETF, because you have a president who's openly discussing Bitcoin and a Bitcoin strategic reserve, that they don't get it in that same way that those of us who came from previous epochs are understanding what the point of separating state and money is meant to do.
Yeah, it's almost like every class has a different reason that they came into Bitcoin, and those reasons are starting to kind of, in a way, conflict with each other from previous reasons. I got into it because it started to, I was in traditional finance and it looked like it was going towards that. I didn't know anything prior to it. But then once I actually learned, like, it ended up being the reason being separation of money and state. And so I was attracted for a reason that I think a lot of people are now coming and staying for, being in the traditional sector of finance. So it's a interesting way to look at it. And I think it's a very healthy thing too, that as much as, like, you know, I have that conflict of seeing Bitcoin in politics and seeing people freak out when politicians simply just say the word, like, I think it is healthy that we're growing and people are coming in for different reasons, and hopefully that, you know, they can learn more about it, you know, through that. Like, what is Bitcoin actually supposed to be? I'm here because number kept going up. You know, why is it going up? What does it actually mean? So yeah, it's an interesting perspective I hadn't really thought about.
Yeah. I mean, let's kind of dive in a little bit deeper to the mining side of it, because I also feel like over the last just couple months, we've seen the entire mining industry just make a hard shift, starting first with just the hash rate and difficulty go trending down. We also have public miners making a hard pivot out of mining Bitcoin. As someone who spends their time entrenched in this space selling miners, like, what are those conversations looking like now versus last year?
Yeah, I mean, the shift really came with AI and what the optimal AI system is, and it very closely aligned with how people have designed optimal Bitcoin mining systems. And so a lot of that shift you saw was these companies that have the infrastructure to mine Bitcoin efficiently that are trying to figure out, okay, how do I do this new trendy thing with what I already have? And does it look more profitable to completely shift or to just maybe pivot off a little bit and have, like, you know, Bitcoin AI kind of balance each other out, or what's that? We're seeing a lot of different models for that, because the way that data centers work is not all too different from each other when you're looking at the different types of data centers, and compute is very lucrative right now. I think that there's going to be right now, the conversation is more of which one is more profitable when you're talking about conversations at that scale. And I don't think there's ever going to be a hard line. Bitcoin mining is more profitable than AI, HPC, or vice versa. I think it's going to be a teeter totter. And I think that it's going to be something that balances out eventually. We saw a hash rate boom when Bitcoin price was ripping over wherever hash rate was expected to be. Like, miners were money printers at that point, but it settled down since then. And I think that AI is going to do the same thing. And I mean, hopefully it makes building a personal PC a little cheaper too.
So, like, I want to kind of unpack what you're talking about and really dive into this, because I feel like we're also seeing, you know, what is a natural progression in free markets, where publicly traded companies have a fiduciary duty to orient to profits for their shareholders, while at the same time, Bitcoin mining, naturally when price is down, has a very low cost of entry versus, you know, when the price is ripping, everyone's like, oh, I should be mining Bitcoin. And then naturally it drives the price of ASICs, hardware, everything just naturally goes up. So as someone who's, again, been in this space for a long time, are we in that sort of perfect moment to have heavier investment into Bitcoin mining while everyone else is kind of fading it, especially the large public players? Or is there still kind of more pain to be had for miners?
I mean, it's very subjective, but in my opinion, I definitely think that this is a good entry point, because you're seeing let's take a step back to around 2021, 2022. The state of the art top of the line machine was an S19 J Pro, and that thing is 100 terahash. It's like 30 joules per terahash at the time. That was like the most efficient miner. Those things were going for like $10,000, $14,000, and they were printing money. Today, I can buy one of someone would pay me to take an S19 J Pro off of their hands at this point. And oh yeah, absolutely. On the Compass marketplace, some of our customers who still have them are listing them for $1 on the marketplace.
What?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Is there hash power that much worse than a 21?
The 21 series is basically double the efficiency, and you're only profitable at a certain rate with the like latest S21 machines. So the S19J Pros are so far underwater that people are just like, I'd rather use them as paperweights.
I'm going to Venmo you $1. Can you get me one?
I got you. Don't worry. Yeah. Hosting costs is still going to be I'll see what I can do. But yeah, I mean, now the latest and greatest machine, the most common one that you see on the market right now that's like still in profit is the S21 XP. It's 14.17 joules per terahash. And at a rate of 7 cents, you're about break even around 7.75 cents kilowatt hour. But the entry point, though, those machines are only at like $3,700. So like, they're not printing money just by plugging them in like J-Pros were in 2021, 2022. But these are going to be, as soon as price rips, like, I mean, if you're expecting this to be close to the bottom and you're still profitable with these miners, like, yeah, scoop some of these up for a couple thousand dollars and then price starts ripping. You're future proving yourself even into the halving when you're looking at it like that. Like, if by the halving we're anywhere close to 100K, like, yeah, you're gonna be good even into the next epoch for at least a little bit.
I had to remind myself how much my energy costs in Los Angeles. So
what is your residential rate, if you don't mind me asking? I have to guess, 15, 17 cents? Oh my God, 20? Oh my God, 25?
Just look, estimates. We're not talking about it. I don't need to depress myself more and remind myself.
Compass Mining offers very competitive hosting. All right.
you've gotten your shill in, you've made your bosses happy. Now it's my turn to make your bosses unhappy. Because 4 years ago, Compass was not the, you know, end all be all. You did not have a golden child. There were issues. I'm going to leave it at that. There were issues 4 years ago with Compass. Talk to me about what has changed. Why are the vibes better at Compass today versus what led up to some very troubling things 4 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, it was a completely different company. It was a very new startup. And we've been through the trenches at this point now. And we positioned ourselves to be one of those mining companies that didn't capsize back then. And that was one of the best things to ever happen, because we saw where we needed to change. We now have kind of set ourselves up to center around vertical integration. Whereas, you know, several years ago, it was more, you know, what can we partner with to get the best service? And now we're concentrating it more to be like, what can we do to provide the best service? So we're kind of getting into that all-in-one mining company where, I mean, we do everything from hosting to operations to setting up sites. We've been through the trenches and learned from mistakes and from trial and error, and the vibes are extremely high now.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a believer in second chances. I don't believe in third. So Tatum, don't mess this up.
Don't worry. I'm doing my best.
I want to talk a little bit about tariffs, because it does affect Bitcoin mining due to just hardware imports. How have you seen that shift industry priorities? I know we talked a little bit about people selling older hardware, albeit being practically worthless to use and operate that old hardware. How are, like, what are you paying attention to in regards to tariffs, the impact to your business, and more broadly, the mining industry?
Yeah, I mean, the conversation has definitely died out a little more than where it was several months ago or even last year, but it was top of the line last year because, I mean, there were, especially when there was just like a bunch of question marks around everything, there was just several thousand miners just around the globe, just sitting in a bay. Like, we don't know exactly what we're supposed to do now because of these tariffs. And so there was a lot of question marks on that. Luckily, I think that that's gotten to be a little more clear. And we're not even, you know, the end user at this point is no longer being directly affected by some of these tariff choices, whereas they were previously because of timelines and stuff like that. But I mean, it is something to look at, even like part of Compass is also logistics. And I worked in the logistics hub in Denver for 3 years. And I didn't realize how much I did not pay attention to regarding just like shipping stuff. And like the conflict in Iran, that's also like, you know, doing some heavy lifting on logistics there too. And it all trickles down into the pipeline. So there's a lot of geopolitical stuff that like you don't think has to do with mining, but it's all mining. Everything is mining.
Okay. First off, I know you're a good Southern boy. Iran, not Iran.
Iran, sorry.
If you could say Israel, you could say Iran.
Iran.
I mean, look, I will gladly double click on that if we want to go in that route. But I do want to, you know, just again, poke fun at the fact that someone who's in people in trust with their money to help them invest and make more money was overlooking shipping costs in their investments. Well,
that is not, what I mean. Like, it's just crazy.
It's just the words that came out of your mouth. It's okay.
You're right. I can't even fight that. Don't make me big. Put me that small.
No. He's big right now. You respond.
You're right.
I'm getting dizzy. Don't.
You put an epileptic warning on here. Oh man, now I'm solo. Come on, guys.
I want to quickly shout out everyone who is watching on Twitter. If you have any questions, feel free to throw them in the chat. We are monitoring that. Everyone watching on YouTube, please make sure you like, subscribe to the channel. Make sure my bosses see that this is actually something productive that I'm taking away from my sales job as well as Tatum's.
I'm at lunch right now.
Love that. Thank you for taking your lunch and not eating during it.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about our fearless leader, the orange man himself, Donald J. Trump. Oh, where to begin?
This guy, am I right?
Look, every Bitcoiner knows I have Trump derangement syndrome, or, you know, I just actually ask the questions that no one is comfortable asking. Choose whatever poison you want to label me as accordingly. But I will start all the way back in December of 22 when Trump launched his absolutely insane NFT line. Insane. Like the buff Trump with the American flag stuff. Like, and how many millions did this end up running up to selling at the top?
And I don't remember the profit numbers, dude, from that. That was like, I feel like that was a flashbang or something. Like, I vaguely remember his first NFT launch, and like I asked about it whenever he came back around into the crypto sphere. I was like, did he launch an NFT collection or am I making that up?
Dude, let me tell you something. I was in Dubai when that happened. I saw the tweets go out. I was like, this cannot be real. For the record, the total price of 44,000 publicly traded NFTs started at $99 each, sold out within 12 hours. Total sales, $4.5 million. Floor price per NFT at one point was $230. Series 2 announced a release in 2023, citing great success. A surge of 800% at one point in Jan 2023, and then a third and fourth series reportedly came out in 23 and 24 respectively.
I didn't even realize there were multiple series.
Neither did I. I'm so glad my Twitter algorithm did not feed me those, because I was so angry when I saw the first series. I think Elon just, you know, doesn't like me. He personally knows me. He actually texted me the other day to quit being so obnoxious on Twitter. So
yeah,
that's why I'm in Twitter timeout.
Did you get the Nikita call? Nikita called me, said that he's taking away my monetization.
Well, Nikita and I go back because we've, you know, debated on the merits of what to do with Iran. And he just told me point blank that I will never reach like a point where Twitter will pay me no matter what. I could have a million followers, have engagement numbers that break Twitter, and they won't pay me simply because I believe that Iranians have the right to self-determination. Neither here nor there. If you disagree with me, feel free to throw it in the comments or DM me directly about that one. But look, like the Trump grift. you opened Pandora's box, man. I did.
By mentioning Nikita beer.
Yeah, I have beef. I have beef.
I do too. Anyway,
I mean, look, he's a long time viewer of the show. So, you know, the show that first episode airs right now that you are all tuning into. Look, but the grift didn't stop at these NFTs. All right. We had the Melania coin, we have the Trump coin. We also have like a series of very strategic investments made by the Trump family, but I want to double click first on the Melania coin that is currently in trial for fraud. Like, what is happening?
That was also a flashbang too, because it's like,
no, it's no real,
one,
bro.
No one saw that. That was like, I mean, I knew from the start whenever. In my book, a politician is a politician is a politician. And whenever everyone was like, oh yeah, Trump's a Bitcoin president, I was like,
no, he's not.
It's just not going to be, it's not going to be that. But I did not think that he was going to be a meme coin, pump fund Solana boy. But
oh, really? You didn't think the biggest grifter of all was going to find the biggest grift in the crypto space? Really?
I'm going to be honest. I didn't think he would stoop that low. I thought he'd be a little smarter about it, but
I think you're smoking too much pot. I think you need to like spend some days sober, go touch some grass. Again, I'm a fact-driven man. Melania token on Truth Social, it was launched on January 19th, 2025. So just, I think, before the inauguration. 24 wallets bought $2.6 million worth of the tokens 2.5 minutes before the public announcement, and a wider group of traders netted roughly $100 million by selling near the coin's peak. That's just the Melania token, all right, which is currently in an active lawsuit. So Melania did not respond to our request for comment. Longtime viewer, longtime listener, dear old friend Melania Trump. She can't publicly speak about this because, you know, she's on trial for it. She won't go to jail, of course, but, you know, neither here nor there. But then, of course, you know, there's the Trump token launched on the Solana network. So, you know, grifters got to grift with other grifters. And you have a 1 billion total supply, 200 million released publicly, 800 million tokens retained by two Trump-owned entities. Within a day, market value of all Trump coins exceeded $27 billion, valuing Trump's just holdings, just Trump's holdings of his own token that he issued, created himself, at $20 billion on paper. Like,
nice.
I wish I didn't have a soul.
Bitcoin president, woohoo! Orange man, orange coin!
Like, how many years is this going to put the Bitcoin, just Bitcoin conversation back, honestly?
Yeah. That's what I didn't like about it, was that the biggest part is that it's just mixing all of this. Like, the non-crypto crowd, like my normie friends, for instance, they think that I work in a scam business because Bitcoin is tied to crypto. In their mind, this is the perception they have of it. And the fact that the world leader, the leader of the free world right there, like mixed it all back in, just does not do wonders for my normie lefty friends. Like it sucks. I don't like it. All right. I don't like it. Makes me mad.
Yeah. I like, you know, like I said, the Trump family is a longtime viewer, old family friend. So like, I know them personally. And like, I've, you know, had long conversations with Don Jr. about this, and it goes over their heads. But to your point, sadly, in an industry and space that is rampant with fraud, bad actors, and scammers, to continue to perpetuate these things while then promising a strategic Bitcoin reserve, in my eyes, sets us further back. And like, I don't even need to get into the nuance of how polarizing our political climate is, that if Trump says something positive about one thing, Democrats' knee-jerk reaction is that's a bad thing without like thinking it through. Like, that stuff aside, I genuinely fear and worry that what happens if in the midterms Democrats win the House and or the Senate, you will start to see aggressive policies against crypto. And again, Bitcoin is not crypto, but to the everyman, they think they're one and the same. And I think those type of things will just set us back. But at this point,
the disappointing thing about that also is that I agree with you that Democrats winning midterms, we're going to see aggressive policy on crypto. But like you said, the Bitcoin and crypto is tied in with them. So it's not the same thing, but they're going to frame it as it is, making it even more difficult to separate it further than the typical crypto grift that you're seeing every day. Like, it's going to make it monumentally difficult, I think. And I think, I honestly think that the Bitcoin in the political sphere is going to hit a new bear market if Democrats win in midterms. But I don't know. I think that we're going to see a lot of, Trump has done more future damage to crypto than anyone else has, I think.
Let me ask you this question. Do you think we reached a new all-time high before the halving, or reached the all-time high of around $126,000 USD because of anything Trump or the Trump administration did? Or had Kamala been elected, we also would have reached similar, if not the exact same, price levels?
I think that it was partly due to Trump. I think that there was a lot of hype.
Defend this terrible take.
I seriously think that because of Trump, there was a lot of hopium and hype. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't think that it was like a legitimate, I think it was a speculative pump, because the Trump administration was promising to be that Bitcoin president, and he wasn't. And so I think that's why we drew back to where we are today. I think that's partly due to it.
So I think you're just flatly wrong on this. I think that the price of Bitcoin is not reflective of any decisions that Trump made. I think if Kamala had been elected, boom, there you go. There we go. That's the best comment I've seen today. Boom. Frame that in the Louvre. Just throw, throw it on the... No,
is that you?
No. There we go. Boom.
So when I was talking, I saw you looking down, and I can only think in my head that's you.
No.
Here's your screenshot. Here's your frame it in the loop.
Look, I think again, something that like got lost in the shuffle in the lead up to the November elections of 2024 was, obviously, we had the weird rug pull of Biden switch to Kamala, which I will go on a rant another time with a different guest about.
That's a whole nother story.
That's like a whole episode. That's a whole episode. Probably not on a Bitcoin podcast, truthfully, but Kamala switched her too. The Dems started to not only change their stance on Bitcoin, but Kamala started to welcome crypto at large because of how much crypto backed firms were donating to the Trump campaign. They realized like this is a losing strategy. They flipped the script. So I don't actually think that what Trump did had any net effect on the price. Now, a broken clock is right twice a day. And like, there are things Trump did that I'm happy about. Like freeing Ross, thank you. He said he'd do it on day one, didn't. I'm not going to be like a technicalities guy. Like, he did it very early and I'm grateful that he did that. But at the same time, like, after that, there hasn't been a whole lot. Oh, we're going to have a strategic Bitcoin reserve. The DOJ is going to stop selling. Great, cool. But the whole, like, Bitcoin bonds thing came and went. as fast as any rumor in DC. You know, oh, we have a crypto czar. Literally didn't do shit. Sorry. I told myself no cursing on this stream. I apologize. This is not the BM Live anymore. At the same time, though, we are also seeing, you know, like a pay-for-play system. Like, what's his name? Justin Sun? Literally was not allowed into the United States. Gives Trump and his family enough money. Oh, here's a pardon for you, bro. Arthur Hayes, yeah, here you go.
Then you see SBF also, like, dude is going crazy on Twitter, just, like, glazing Trump, trying to get that pardon. Yeah. And we're setting precedents that is how you get a pardon for defrauding the American people in the same way that the president is doing.
I think sometimes like we get lost in the fray a little bit, and I want to be really careful, because my issue is not that Trump did these things. My issue is that the system has allowed it. This is not unique to Trump. This is not unique to Biden. This has been a system that we have created, and like slowly, inch by inch, we have given the ability to our government leaders the chance to do these things, because we don't push back. We don't say no. We just blindly accept, like, oh, okay, cool. Like, Trump can do that. We don't have a level of accountability. And all that means is then the next leader will try to push it further and further and further. And for any of us watching, except for the Trump family and Elon and Nikita, longtime viewers of today's first episode of this podcast, like, most of us can't buy or curry these type of favors. So where does that leave us? In a very uncomfortable society and situation. But I want to double click on one more Trump family grift, because I, you know, brought up Justin Sun. But we also have World Liberty Financial, an entity that a Trump controlled entity owns 60% of, and really strangely is entitled to 75% of revenue from coin sales. This is a Justin Sun sort of grift that has, you know, aligned itself with the Trump family. We see Eric and Don Jr. are actively involved in management.
The whole Trump family, like, board members?
Yeah.
Or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Which,
like, again, this is totally normal, right? Let's talk about Hunter Biden's laptop. Like, God, how dare he? Like, what? The grift happens on both sides. It happens on both sides. I'm over this idea of, like, well, when my side does it, it's acceptable. But when your side does it, no, it's bad on both sides. Keep that same energy. Like, it's laughable. It's laughable that we are, well, he's a Bitcoin. He's pushing Bitcoin. No, he's not. No, he is not. Stop fucking. Sorry.
And you told me to act on the best behavior.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm trying. It's just laughable. This whole situation we find ourselves is laughable. But the glow up of Hunter Biden, I am here for. I am here.
Dude, I'm rooting for Hunter, man.
I'm here for unhinged Hunter. Like, give me more. I also just want to kind of dive into some of the other policy things, unless there's anything else you want to talk about World Financial.
No.
World Liberty Financial. Sorry. Let me get the name right.
Willify, whatever.
Willify. All right. So, in January 23rd, 2025, an executive order strengthening American leadership in digital financial technology repeals Biden's 22 crypto executive order. Sure. Paul Atkins becomes the SEC chair. SEC created a new crypto task force. Dismissed cases against, Justin Sun, Coinbase, Kraken, Consensus, Robinhood, OpenSea, Cumberland, and then made a settlement with Ripple.
Wasn't CZ also included in that?
I think he's negotiating. I don't believe it's actually been finalized. But I think CZ, I think they're negotiating the deal points. You know, soccer fan, you got to negotiate with the team, the transfer fee, and then you negotiate with the player, his new contract. I think we're in the, like, transfer fee, but the contract itself has been agreed upon. Like CZ will be allowed to step foot in the United States, just like Justin Sun was. But I want to, like, what was his name? The bald guy who's head of SEC before. You know, Gary Gensler? Yes.
My man, right. Gary G.
Okay. Let's talk Gary Gensler for a second, because I have the exact opposite opinion on Gensler that the general Bitcoin space does. I want your opinion first, and then let's kind of like talk about this and unpack this.
I think he's a funny, goofy guy. I think he's a silly goose. Because I was introduced to him through his was it the MIT blockchain courses or whatever, and then I did more research into him. What was it? Was it Tron that he was, or I can't remember what
Tron was. Sun.
Sun. And Gary was backing some other chain, right? Wasn't he? Or am I?
Think so. He had ties to the FTX, like that whole crew.
Yeah, I definitely, he was sus, and I never really cared too much for him. I didn't think that he was a net positive for Bitcoin. And but yeah, I don't know. I didn't have a strong opinion. I just thought of him as a goofy little guy.
He had ties to Binance. That's what it was.
Binance. Okay.
Which, like, super sketchy, obviously. But I think this is like so forgotten by Bitcoiners, yourself included, because you are wrong. Gary Gensler was the one who came out and made Bitcoin a commodity to keep outside of his and the SEC's purview, which I think is actually one of the most important things that happened to Bitcoin over the course of the last epoch.
I can agree with you there.
Like, I think that was more important than the ETFs, quite honestly.
Oh, yeah.
But for whatever reason, maybe it's his ties to the FTX crew, maybe it's his ties to CZ and Binance, but I genuinely believe by cementing Bitcoin as a commodity, he did more to help Bitcoin in the long term, as we've been talking about the way Trump has damaged Bitcoin in the long term, because now whatever SEC chair comes in, that reverses that, because there eventually will be one that does. It may not be this one, may not be the next one, but eventually someone is going to try to put it under government supervision. Like, it will have to be someone who is so anti-crypto at large, and that hopefully will happen during a point where we see the industry has blossomed so much that it's so not popular. They will push it forward. People will revolt. People will be upset, and they reverse the decision. But Gary built that moat for us. And I think it's like the biggest, like, shoot yourself in the foot moment, the way Bitcoiners specifically were against Gary Gensler. But if I'm wrong, tell me.
No, I can agree with you there. He's just a silly, goofy guy.
Tatum, I need you to stop like trying to like make me feel good about myself.
I agree that Bitcoin as a commodity is good and better than the ETF.
I'm just trying to bust your balls a little bit. I want to then unpack, where was the other one? Okay. So our Bitcoin president announced in March 6th, an executive order establishing the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve with our crypto czar, David Sacks. Now, for those who don't listen to the All In podcast religiously the way I do, David Sacks is an insider in Solana. Very important detail to understand. Him and Chamath openly were trying to sell their Solana tokens that they got pre-mined openly on the podcast to each other. Like, need that fact ingrained in everyone's mind before I say the rest of this. The digital asset stock of the US digital asset stockpile, also named Solana, Cardano, XRP, and Ethereum as candidates for a broader digital asset stockpile. Look, I am very staunchly Bitcoin only. When clients come and speak to me about, hey, I want to buy crypto, like, I will bully you. If you want to have a conversation about your Bitcoin allocation strategy, I'm happy to talk about the crypto of it. If you have crypto holdings, we can discuss it. I will bully you. I will tell you why I think this is wrong. But look, I like to gamble. I bet on sports. It's fun, but I don't treat that like it's an investment strategy for the future. We just saw over the last, 2 months ago, David Hoffman, one of the biggest like Ethereum bulls, fully opt out. It's like, this is not going to be the future of money. Like I'm out. And yet here we are like thinking like, oh, Trump has done good, when like read the fine print. So which of these shit coins do you own?
Me?
Yeah. Who else? None. You act like there's someone else on this stream. So you're not buying Ethereum with your S19?
No. You can't do that. I own no shit coins. None.
Good.
Zero. I did get an airdrop once that I did cash out immediately upon finding out. And I also burned like $200 in fees trying to figure that out. I had to get like special gas or something, but I don't even know how I got it. But I'm Bitcoin only.
Look, I think we're aligned on this idea that being Bitcoin only is, like, as the Mandalorian would say, this is the way. At the same time, like, I'm also a big believer of financial freedom. To me, freedom does not mean like you have to do everything I say, even though apparently on Bitcoin Twitter, that's what it means to a lot of you. Like, whatever. So the gamble as you see fit. Like I said, you are welcome to reach out to us. We have a little link or a QR code right here. Feel free. You can reach out to me directly. You can reach out to anyone on our team on the Infinite side to talk not only your Bitcoin strategy, but if you want to get bullied about your crypto holdings, like, feel free. Sometimes like we need that. Sometimes you need a little bit of a wake-up call. But feel free. Use the QR code or go to infinite.bitcoinwell.com to schedule a time with any of our executive Bitcoin advisors to discuss your holdings. And of course, if you are using a custodial platform, I won't name names, opt out. Use a non-custodial exchange for the first time in your life. Feel financial freedom for real. This is just a reminder that Bitcoin Well is the only non-custodial exchange that exists in the United States of America. Everywhere else, you have to use a custodian. You have counterparty risk. Bitcoin Well will never hold your Bitcoin. We will immediately send it to your wallet. If you have any questions on that, feel free to shoot me an email, q@bitcoinwell.com. Tatum.
Q.
What does the future of the Bitcoin mining industry look when we have public miners shifting out, when we have a Bitcoin president? Not even concerned about mining of it all, but the grift of it all. What does the future of this space look like? What do you anticipate for the next epoch? Where do we go from here?
My pipe dream is that we see more manufacturers and more competition come into the limelight. I don't know how accurate that is, but I do want to see more options in hardware. Where, you know, one to two, I guess you can call it maybe three entities are oligopolizing manufacturing right now. But the main focus right now is to figure out how to stay efficient, how to mine efficiently, so more people can mine. Because, I mean, it's only a hobby to a certain point, and you got to start looking at the economics of it. And yeah, we're reaching close theoretical physical limit to efficiency, and it's all about seeing how far we can get with that. What other cooling methods do we have? What other modifications can we make to make these things, you know, this much more efficient? So a lot of deploying and a lot of shifting around. Well, that's going to happen, but I'm excited for it, and I'm going to be the first guy to get my hands on these machines and really, really see what they are.
Yo, chill. The robots will be our overlords. You got to speak respectfully about that.
Love my clinkers.
I realized I wanted to ask you about Hut 8, which used to be truly one of my favorite companies of the publicly traded Bitcoin miners. I had high expectations. And they joined the grift as well. They own a majority stake of American Bitcoin Corp, founded in March of 2025 by Eric and Don Jr.
Yep.
Now, unlike a lot of other publicly traded Bitcoin miners, they have not made this sort of public announcement of shifting to AI data centers. Literally, by the time you're listening to this, that may change. So bear with me if my facts are wrong there. They have a stated goal, and I want to get your take on, like, what does this actually mean for novices like myself and other people who don't spend their days actually, like, playing with Bitcoin miners or understand sort of what the efficiency numbers look like. But their stated goal is to become the largest, most efficient pure play public miner, targeting at least 50 exahash a second at less than 15 joules terahash. Yes, fleet efficiency. Like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, so efficiency is measured either by joules per terahash or watts per terahash. The lower the number, the more efficient it is. And so they're wanting to basically stay with under the 15 joules per terahash line at 50 exahash, which is a massive amount of machines, mind you.
Context, like, help us conceptualize.
I'm trying to conceptualize it, and it's actually, so hold on, let me do some quick napkin math in my head or on my phone. That's a good idea too.
Or just throw it in Claude. Like, what? Yeah. Why are you doing any math?
Because I'm old.
Okay, here, let me ask you a simple question, because neither me nor Zach are engineers. Is a joule or a watt more energy?
A joule is the byproduct, or how does it? It's an electrical term, and this is where I'm going to show that I don't know everything about electricity. But it's the energy that's produced by a watt, as far as I can tell. I think basically it's saying what is your terahash output for how much energy you're putting into it. Think of it as the speedometer and the reps on your car dashboard. You're wanting to get a higher speed at lower reps. So more terahash at less electricity.
Okay, got it. You mean less gas?
Yeah, gas. Yeah. Essentially,
cool.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you saying? You are making this harder and more confusing right now.
I thought I was making it easier. Dang.
No. You did by the end. I'm still waiting for your back of the napkin math, but I've given Claude a head start. Right, technically, you had the head start, so we're going to see who is faster.
What is Claude saying? What does Claude say?
So to get 273 terahash per second at 12 joules per terahash, that is about a little bit more than 105,000 S21 XP Hyde. What's the Hyde?
Hydro.
For just the S21 XPs, it's about 185,000 units. Yeah. Again, conceptualize this for us. Like, how large of a Bitcoin mining operation would this look like? Like, how many
football teams? Not a single operation. No. It'd be multiple. It would be like multiple acres, multiple different facilities. Likely multiple different power grids, because it to have that many machines in one area is next to impossible. It's just the amount of power and maintenance that large of a size would take. It would be, you need a city basically to manage it. So it's definitely going to be, there are projects out there that are trying to, you know, have these mega facilities. And I've seen several facilities that are extremely large, like 300 megawatts, where, you know, you need a golf cart to get from one side to the other. But this is a huge goal. And what?
I wanted to bully you, but I won't.
What?
Keep going.
It's an extremely large goal, and it's almost inconceivable to think about, but if they think they can do it, cool. And I think that a lot of that is going to be where you're getting into the single digit efficiency with some of the units that they're wanting to use. Cause I know they use a lot of hydro cooled miners and a lot of Watts miners as well. So, that's also something to take into account as well. And contracted power. There's so many nuances to it, but overall, humongous goal. Humongous. Massive. Huge.
Huge. Yes. Yes. So when will genuinely serious question, when will Compass bribe the Trump administration to get larger hash power? What's in the works there? Tell me, should I be trying to buy on your next raise? When will Compass enter the fray of grifts with the Trump administration? Oh, hat is backwards now.
I'm not commenting on Compass's bribing the Trump administration. No, we don't.
You're telling me there's a chance.
No!
I think your exact words are no comment, which means it's in the works.
No, it means I don't know what to say. I don't have counsel to hold my hand.
Okay. In fairness to anyone listening, nothing we have said should be taken as financial advice. If you want to talk more miners, hit up Tatum. If you want to talk specifically your Bitcoin allocation strategy, reach out to me, reach out to the Bitcoin Well team. Everything else is two friends, talking it out, venting. You have essentially just joined our therapy coping session. Nothing more, nothing less. But seriously, don't you feel like you guys should get in on the grift?
I mean,
Adam, I know you're watching. I think we should get in on the grift a little bit here.
Throwing a few shares of Canada in there in the offer.
I mean, look, don't forget, Bitcoin Well is publicly traded in both the U.S. and Canadian markets.
I should have worn my Bitcoin Well. I have the little Canadian ticker on the side.
Good. I'm too tall. My camera angle's weird. We're still working on this. This is just episode one, so we'll figure the kinks of this out later. But as a reminder, we are the only non-custodial exchange in the United States. So even if you're just trying to DCA, buy a little bit at a time, move those over to Bitcoin Well, because we will send it straight to your cold storage wallet. You do not need to concern yourself with counterparty risk. Because, last time I was in this space publicly, all we were concerned about was
a really bad problem, a little bit of counterparty risk.
A little bit. A tiny little bit.
A wee little counterparty risk.
I mean, hey, look. Mt. Gox people are finally getting made whole. Hey. Took 12 years.
That's bleak.
I mean, my favorite thing about the FTX of it all was how they did make, if you left your Bitcoin on their platform, you got dollars back for it. You got dollars back of the value of it that day, not
they literally did the most roundabout way to give the least amount of money and it make kind of sense. like the Bitcoin that you had at the time we went under, we'll give you those dollars worth. It's like, screw you.
I mean, well, the just chef's kiss of it all was the fact that this was across the board. This wasn't only Bitcoiners were made whole or only Bitcoiners were treated like this. Everyone, if you held Solana, if you held FTX token, if you held Ethereum, but the price of Ethereum ended up being the exact same the day of FTX's collapse and the day they started making those ETH holders whole.
I remember seeing that.
That was so funny. That was so funny to me. It's like that meme of the guy who's celebrating with champagne for finishing third place. It's like, yeah, we did it. We made it on the podium.
Oh, man. I forgot. That's serendipitous. Beautiful. Absolutely.
Dude, it's fine. If you've enjoyed this, if you've not enjoyed this and want to tell me why you didn't enjoy this, throw a comment. If you're on YouTube, please, please, please like and subscribe our channel. I'm trying to grow this. I'm trying to prove to my boss that this is a worthy investment of my time, effort, and energy, as well as our team member. Shout out our producer, Zach, behind the scenes. Tatum, I will let you have a hot mic for, I'll give you the final word. But before I do, please, if you are not using the only non-custodial exchange in the United States, hop on over to bitcoinwell.com/sign up. And if you want to talk about your Bitcoin allocation strategy with one of our advisors, feel free to go to infinite.bitcoinwell.com. Tatum, I'll give you the last word.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to show myself real quick. Follow me over on X, the everything app, at Tatum Turnup. Shout out Nikita and Elon. Find me on YouTube, Tatum Turnup. Sacrifice convenience. Until then, you're not free. Self-host as much as you can. And get your hands on a Bitcoin miner, because it might just be the next thing that you, the next rabbit hole that you fall down. But be careful, because there is no coming back. How was that?
Yeah, like a B minus. Okay.
All
right. You gotta work on it. But we'll have you back soon. Well, dude, I guess I would get grounded with a B. I'd get grounded with an A minus, honestly, but that's just, you know, immigrant parents. All right, guys. Thank you all for tuning into the very first episode of the Bitcoin Well podcast. If you are not, make sure you subscribe, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you all.